You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good evening, everybody. Steve here for another Nutters call in. We are going to be talking about the Arta Baturbia versus Anthony Yard fight, which is taking place tomorrow evening over in the Wembley Arena. Arta Baturbia have 18-0, 18 knockouts. Anthony Yard 23-2. Not sure how many knockouts he's got, but it's quite a few anyway. This is a unified world light heavyweight title extravaganza. All three belts in the possession of Baturbia, IBF, WBC, and WBO. We'll be on the line in Wembley tomorrow evening, Saturday the 28th of January. Only one person joining me on the call so far, but it's a big name, big personality. He's trying to get an 18-wheeler out the car park at the moment. How's it going, Justin, a.k.a. the North Carolina Assassin?
It is not going well right now. We are sitting in a parking lot at a high school in South Carolina, and I can't move. So I'm talking to you because I can't move.
He can't move, everybody. It's 4 o'clock over there at the moment where Justin is located. He's trying to get out and he's on the call with the Nutters. God bless him. If anybody else wants to jump on, if you're listening in live, show me a message in the chat. Shoot us a message if you want to, or a question or a comment, or jump on the call if you wish. Big fight tomorrow night then, Justin. Obviously not as big over in the States as we wait for the year to kind of ramp up a bit and the fights to be announced on the PBC, DAZN, ESPN, etc. I guess you're going to be able to watch this on ESPN tomorrow evening. Initial thoughts on Baturbiev against Yard? Is it getting the pulse racing there over in North Carolina?
I mean, everybody likes to see Baturbiev fight, so I guess that would get the pulse racing, but I don't know. I mean, it's one of those deals, like, you know what's going to happen. I mean, I don't think – I mean, could Yard land a crazy punch? I guess. But, I mean, y'all kind of know what's going to happen. So, those fights always kind of lose a little thrill from them when you know pretty much that you're just wondering what round he's going to knock him out in. But everybody likes to see Baturbia fight. So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited just to watch him fight. And I guess it's cool for everybody over in England to get to see him fight live, because, I mean, I'm sure he doesn't have a lot of fights left in him. So, I mean, it's good if you get to go see him live, because I'm sure he's only got a few left because he just keeps getting hurt or something happens. So, yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's good to see Yard. I mean, you got to give Yard credit. He went to go fight Kovalev. He gets into the fights. He wants to, but he's just not good enough.
Yeah, I suppose he's got a puncher's chance, but he's up against the ultimate puncher at the end of the day, Justin. Do you think that he could land something I mentioned a few weeks ago, that he has? He's a banger, but at a certain level. He's never fought at Baturbiev's level. I think one of the things that you mentioned there, injuries. We saw Baturbiev against Marcus Brayan. Whenever he got cut, the blood was pissing down his face. That just spurred him on even more. I don't think injuries are going to be in a factor short-term in this fight, but long-term they might be. But if Yard lands on him the way Callum Johnson did, you never know. But the stamina, I think, Justin, is a problem, as we saw in the Kovalev fight for him.
Yeah, I mean, Yard, he looks – I mean, of course, when he looks in the mirror, he looks like, you know, okay, he looks like a bodybuilder, but that doesn't work in boxing. When you're that huge – your muscles need all that oxygen and everything to work. When you're that big, you just don't have great stamina. Like, it's just you don't last like the whole fight. And so, yeah, he has to land him really. He has to land quick in the first few rounds. If it goes past a few rounds, it's over. I mean, I think it's over anyway, but it's 100% over if it goes past 4 or 5 rounds. Because Yard, there's no way he's going to have anything left past that. So he has to come out, in my opinion, and go for it. Because his best shot is the first couple of rounds. After that, there's no way. He's done. He's done.
Just quickly, Justin, before we move on to the other guys, in case we lose you there out in the Wild West, the Wild East, rather, what have you predicted on the Prediction League? What have you officially put in for?
Well, Steve, I have decided I'm not doing the Prediction League right now.
No!
Well, the simple fact is that it took all the enjoyment out of actually watching boxing. I mean, I'm not trying to hate. It did. I was like, because I'm rooting for guys that I can't stand. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I hate – there's some guys, you know, you just hate. I'm like, man, come on, I want this guy to last 8 rounds. But inside, you're like, I wish you would just get killed the first round. Then you're sitting there like, the over-under, and, like, if he's going to go six, and is this guy – I like to root for who I like to root for, and I just, like – I want to see it happen. I don't – I just – yeah, I mean, that's just me. That's why I kind of gave up at the end of the last one. I was like, you know what? I'm just throwing some random picks out. I said, because I want the underdog dude to beat the shit out of this guy, even though I know he won't, but I'm not going to root for – like, I was rooting for guys that I absolutely can't stand. That I just, like, cannot stand, and it just – I didn't get any enjoyment out of it, so I decided to take – I don't know what we're doing now, what, seven quarters, or we're splitting it up? I don't know, but I just took the first one off.
No, you're just right, Justin. If you're not enjoying it, then pull out. That's what I always say. But no, absolutely. Andy, I think Andy's of a familiar mindset as well. Stick along as long as you can, Justin. Hopefully you're safe over there in the 18-wheeler.
His problem, Steve, is that he has a good time, so he can't pull out.
Yeah, well – Ach, Matty. You always have to lower the tone. My fellow co-host here, Matthew DiGiallonardo, has jumped on the call from the US of A, like Justin. Veritable neighbours, these two. How are you, Matthew, on this Friday evening?
I'm good, man. Just got home from work, waiting for it to snow like hell this weekend.
Oh, really? You expecting a bit of snow?
Yeah, it's supposed to get down to below zero Fahrenheit again, like Sunday into Monday. So, hey, you know, good times.
Excellent stuff. We have discussed Yard and Baturbiev in previous episodes, but you are on here, and that's what we're talking about this evening on this Nutter's Calling. You are a nutter for the evening. Anthony Yard needs to push Artur Baturbiev backwards to beat him. That's what Callum Johnson said in the Boxing Scene or one of the online newspapers. He needs to push Baturbiev back to beat him. That's easier said than done. Matty, Joe Smith tried to do that, and look what happened to him.
Well, I think that's kind of the problem with fighting him is that you saw what Callum Johnson did. You know that he is susceptible to a punch. I mean, that said, you know, 175 pounds. I mean, that's a puncher's division. You know, you're not a whole lot of light crackers around there if you get caught clean. But he can be caught, and I think that's kind of what everybody's banking on. And Joe Smith Jr. said, "Screw it, I'll just go for it." And again, it's hell of a lot better than taking a 10-round beating off of the guy. You'd just much rather get it over with in 5-6 minutes. But I tend to think that I think Yard's going to try to go the other way. Despite the issues that they have with stamina, et cetera, I think they're really going to try to box and move for the first half of the fight, if they can make it the full first half of the fight, and see if they can't get Baturbiev into later waters. But I just don't know how that's going to work because, you know, amidst, you know, all the knockouts on Baturbiev's record, I mean, they range from round one to round 12. This guy carries power, and he seems to carry his stamina all the way through a fight. So, you know, all I can say is I hope he goes past midway through the seventh round. That's my only real hope in this fight, is just see it through, man. Make it dirty for half the fight and see what happens.
Exactly. The Prediction League living in Matty's head free there. A couple of other boys have jumped on as well. Shout out to Joe Kennedy this evening. We'll come to you shortly, Joe. Good to have you with us there. Zekonomics as well is here, one of our Scottish correspondents. Spencer Fearon earlier was giving Yard a puncher's chance. Zekonomics, I know Anthony Yard was saying that. He's had guns and knives pointed at him and he fears no fighter in the ring. I don't doubt that's true. But at the end of the day, we're not in the streets here. You're up against a verified bona fide puncher in the ring. Queensbury rules. He's going to have to pull one hell of a job off if he's going to beat Baturbiev tomorrow night.
Absolutely. Like, as far as I'm concerned, this is like a Christians versus Lions job. Like, he talks about Lions in the camp. Well, he's on the wrong side of the fucking Lions here tonight as well, tomorrow night, as far as I can see. I mean, I think if he goes for it early, he'll get stopped quick. And if he boxes and runs, then Baturbiev will get to him late. I just can't see any way that he's coming away without getting knocked out here. Now, Yard, to a certain level and at certain points in the past, he's looked like a puncher, you know, domestically. But I think Dominic said, you know, on the sort of main pod that weekend, how's his power really going to carry it against the elite level? Like, there's levels to boxing, and Baturbiev is right at the top level. Is he going to be able to land in Baturbiev? If he does land, is it going to hurt him? I'm not so sure. Like, this is a guy that get outboxed by like a one-armed domestic sort of level guy, and Lyndon Arthur. I know he won the rematch, but there's kind of questions about how that rematch.
Bit of a funny one, that wasn't it?
Well, there was some funny. Maybe there was some funny business. Who knows? It was a bit weird. But listen, on paper anyway, he got the win. Lyndon Arthur's no bad. He's a decent operator. But he's never done anything against anybody close to that level. Like, the fight against Kovalev, okay, he did hurt him. He had him ready to go. But that seemed to me to be maybe as much about Kovalev gassing, you know, and just getting kind of caught out a wee bit, as much as it was to do with, like, the power of yard. I mean, Kovalev by that point was, like, well down the road of being a functioning alcoholic.
Yeah.
He was past his best, and he had him ready to go, and he still couldn't close it out. So I'm struggling to see how he's going to handle anything to do with, like, a really, really top level guy. But, you know, fair play, he's taking the fight. I think it'll be entertaining. I think when you've got, like, one of the best guys in the sport coming and fighting, you know, in the UK against a decent operator, he's no bad. It's good to see. It's good to watch. We're all going to tune in. We're all going to enjoy it no matter what happens. But I'm kind of the mindset that he's going to box and run. He's not going to stand in front of him. Like, I think he probably should go for it. He probably should try and see, go toe-to-toe and see what happens. But it's easy for us to say that. I'm sitting on the couch with a few beers in me saying, aye, go for it, go. Go toe-to-toe with this absolute fucking wrecking ball. And see what happens. You know, it's easy for us to say that. It's easy for us to say, aye, that's what you should do. It probably is what you should do, but I don't think that's what he's going to be getting told to do. But, you know, we'll see what happens, and it'll be a good Saturday night.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, Zico. I think it will. Welcome, Joe Kennedy, head of the Prediction League. Good to have you with us. How are you sounding, brother?
How's it going, Steve? All good. I'm in the car. I'm out getting a bean burrito in honour of Donnie, so excuse me if you hear any cars beeping behind me.
No, that's absolutely fine, Joe. A couple of things for you quickly. Picking up on what Zico was saying, it is nice to see the likes of Beterbiev coming over to sort of close to these kind of shores, similar to when Inoue went to Scotland. Javonta Davis, obviously he wasn't the megastar at the time, but coming over to fight Liam Walsh in the Copper Box. It's good for the fans to go along and see that spectacle, however long it lasts. We don't know. Also, I agree with Zico. Yard could run, but with Beterbiev, and especially with Yard's power as well, I really do struggle to see how this is going to be a stinker. I think it will be a fun fight, Joe, for as long as it lasts.
Yeah, you know, I was of the same mind that, you know, this guy is a generational fighter. And, you know, when he came to MSG for the Joe Smith fight, I was made sure I had tickets to that. And it was just amazing to see the man. It was unfortunate that it didn't last very long. I think, you know, he just basically was way too good for Smith, and Smith could not live with him, you know. Couldn't handle the power, couldn't handle the jab, couldn't handle basically anything that Beterbiev was thrown at him. And he'd started timing the right hands on Smith coming in. I think in the first minute he lands a huge one, and then for the whole fight it just took away Smith's jab, and it took away Smith's kind of come forward aggressive style, and it was just a demolition. And I think probably the same is going to happen against tonight. You know, I think it'll be another case of levels, and unfortunately, you know, for those going tonight, it'll just be a 2 or 3 round fleeting glimpse of this monster. You know, that was the same kind of view that I got. And it was enough, you know, it was amazing just to see the guy. I think I mentioned it before, but he's built like nothing I've ever seen. He's just muscle on muscle on muscle, and nothing is wasted. And, you know, you can clearly see that by fact of his religion and whatnot, he clearly lives a life outside of the ring as well. He's like massively dedicated. I think he's just got boxing and his family and his religion, and that's it. That's his life, you know. You gotta fear any man who's like that, you know. I thought it was funny Anthony Yard going on about how he's from the ends and stuff like that, and he's had this happen to him. Oh, this comes from the fucking Dagestan. It was a war zone when he was growing up, like, you know.
Yeah.
You think that's gonna scare him? Like, so I just thought that was funny. Like, but I don't feel too confident with Anthony Yard tonight. Like Zico said, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, one of the best fighters in the world kind of show us why he's so good tonight and just basically demolish this guy who's not going to be on his level.
Absolutely. Good stuff from Joe there. Not giving Yard much of a chance. I think Justin, stylistically, Yard had a lot of trouble with Kovalev's jab. Really nice left jab going in there. But Turbiev can box a little bit too. How do you expect him to come out on Saturday night? I think he'll be respectful of Yard's power. He'll be respectful of the fact that he doesn't really know what Yard brings to the table. I think he will come out and box like he did early on against Gvozdik, just to try and wire him up with a jab, try and push him back the first couple of rounds, see what he's got, and then start throwing the shots. And if Turbiev does dispense with the jab, Justin, as he has done in previous fights, that could be a little bit of hope for Yard, maybe catch him in between the shots, because if Turbiev stands off and boxes him, I think Yard might have as much trouble if he stands there and bangs with him.
I think you just answered the question, Steve. Everything you said is exactly what I would have said. That was it. I mean, that's it. That's it. That's the, I think what you just said is exactly what Turbiev is going to do. That's exactly what he'll do. He's not going to come out. He never. I don't think he ever comes out like full speed ahead the first second. So yeah. You summed it up. That's exactly what he's going to do. He's going to give it a little bit, just a little bit to see. Because, you know, I mean, I don't care who you're fighting. People can still – everybody can get knocked out. So, of course, you want to come out, haven't fought a guy before. You're going to give it a little bit. Yeah, you summed it up. You said it better than I could have. That's it. That's exactly what will happen.
That's why you're in the 18-wheeler and I'm stuck here behind the mic, Justin.
Hey, if you want to get out, go throw some gang signs up with these guys right over here in this window, in this little minivan. You are more than welcome to go do it right now. They'll probably let you join.
I don't envy.
Jump right in there with them.
I don't envy Justin driving that 18 wheeler. Flip me, there'd be some carnage if I got behind the steering wheel, driving on the wrong side of the road as well. Could you imagine, like Grand Theft Auto over there? But good luck to Justin. He's doing a great job. Matty, you know that I love a story, love a little yarn. Dan Aziz, the British champion, was over sparring against Beterbiev, and he had this to say to Boxing Scene's Declan Taylor. He said, overall, it was funny because for my first spar, I got picked up and taken to the gym by another sparring partner who was a cruiserweight. He turned up with a black eye, a bust lip and a nose bent, fresh injuries. I thought, what the hell? But I didn't want to show I was nervous about the spar, but I asked him anyway, who have you been sparring? Was it Beterbiev? He said, yeah. I thought, bloody hell, and asked him what it was like. He said, it was good, but the only advice I'll give you is keep your hands up. Sounds like sound advice to me, Matty.
Yeah, the goal against Beterbiev, don't get hit in the face. I agree with that advice, and if I was Anthony Yard, I'd be taking that one to heart.
Taking it to heart and taking it on the chin. Did you go the over or the under on the pod last week?
You know, I took the over. You know, with Yard being able to stretch Kovalev a bit like that, I know he doesn't have the greatest engine, but I feel like he's got at least 7 rounds of engine in him. And I do think he's going to do everything he can to kind of keep his distance, pick his moments. And I actually think he might have some moments of success. He might even pick up a couple of the first few rounds, but it's just a matter of, with someone like Beterbiev, I mean, when, you know, there's always punchers that come along, right? And you just know that they'll get figured out eventually. They're lacking something. Even someone as dynamic as Wilder. But Beterbiev, his skill set is so incredible. Aside from that power, it's hard to see how somebody could stay away from it for 12 rounds. And maybe Yard might even do something amazing and be ahead on a card or something by the time he gets stopped. But I do think he can see his way through the first half of the fight, just using his wits and his guile. But I think beyond that, it's just a matter of when.
Yeah, it is. It's a matter of when. Zico, one thing I ask myself most days is, where are we going with this? But from a boxing context, where are we going after this fight? Obviously, if Yard beats Beterbiev, depending on how the outcome comes, whether it's a knockout, points, cut or whatever, that just throws everything up in the air. Assuming Beterbiev splatters him, which I'm kind of hoping, because I've got nothing against Yard. He seems like a nice guy, but I really want to see Beterbiev unify all the titles against Bivol. But now they're talking about Bivol. Rightly or wrongly, going and taking the money against Canelo, talks of him boiling down to super middleweight. Where would you like to see the winner go? I mean, assuming it's going to be Beterbiev, which kind of angle, and, you know, including Bivol, including Canelo, where would you like to see this all end up?
If it was up to me, it would be Beterbiev against Bivol on Sunday morning. I think that's probably the best fight, and I think it's definitely the best time for Beterbiev to be taking that fight, because he's 38 years old. He's no spring chicken, and we've seen before, like very few fighters carry on into their 40s at the top level. So, yeah, I hope that it could get sorted out that he fights Bivol. You know, that performance against Canelo was phenomenal. But, I mean, this talk about Bivol dropping down to 168, somebody mentioned this, I'm sure, in the group chat.
Yes.
But Bivol's been talking about this for about 5 years. It's never fucking happened. So I'm kind of sceptical that he would want to do that. I'm kind of sceptical that Canelo would want that rematch. Like, I'm struggling to think of what other fights Canelo could really put on the table to kind of satisfy TV companies and things like that. But I would hope that it kind of wound up that we would get Beterbiev against Bivol. But from Bivol's point of view, you know, why not have that fight in 2 years' time? Do the kind of Floyd Mayweather thing against Pacquiao, just wait for the older guy to get even older.
I think Beterbiev be put together by Sellotape by that point, Zico.
Well, you never know, but I mean, from the point of view of Bivol, he's a guy that kind of does everything well, but not one thing amazing, like a kind of world-class Callum Smith almost, you know. There's not one thing. Maybe you could say he's got world-class technique and, you know, he's quite kind of polished. But aside of that, there's not massive amounts.
I think his judgment of range and distance is one of the things that
okay,
sets him
yeah.
apart.
Okay, that's true. But that's like a kind of subtle subjective thing. It's not like you can see that he's visibly quicker, he's visibly stronger, he's visibly more powerful. In the way probably that Beterbiev is visibly stronger and visibly more powerful. So, I don't know. I think it's a bit of a weird... Is super middleweight a great division? No, it's not super middleweight. Is light heavyweight a great division nowadays? Not so sure. Maybe there's kind of up-and-coming guys, I don't know, but it just feels like a shame that Beterbiev's got to the age of 38 and there's never really been, aside the Gvozdik, maybe, and possibly Joe Smith, there's never been a top guy that he's been in with. You know, it's one of these kind of weird, quirky things. A wee bit like Golovkin, I suppose, but even more so, in that he's this tremendous boxer, he's a great puncher, but he comes from like a way out in the back of beyond. Like, he's Russian, but he's not ethnically Russian. You know, he's from fucking Dagestan, and he's ethnically Chechen. It's not the same as being like who was that big heavyweight that knocked out David Price, get done for drugs? What'd you call him?
Povetkin.
Both of these guys are Russians, but they're not the same kind of Russians. Like if Beterbiev was a Moscow or a St. Petersburg Russian, there would have been big money behind him, big fights to be had. There was a time when it looked like Povetkin was going to get Deontay Wilder over until the full drugs test. He would have had that sort of career, but he's not that sort of Russian, and I think that's kind of counted against him. I think he's a Muslim. Not a great time to be a Muslim in Russia, and I just think like he is a bit like Golovkin in that he's what Steve Wunsch calls the president of the Who Needs Him Club. He's that sort of fighter, and he's got to a stage in his career where only the hardest of the hardcore are appreciating him. But you know, I hope he wins the fight. Hope he gets a fight against Bivol, and hope he basically wipes the floor with both of them, as I think he would.
Dez has jumped on the call. Good evening to you, Dez. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, mate. How are you, Steve?
Not too bad. Good to have you on. We're talking a bit of Beterbiev and Yard here, the Battle of the Punchers. Does Yard have a puncher's chance for you, Dez, or anything beyond that?
No, I don't. You've got no chance at all.
Get rid of him early, then, or do you think Beterbiev, are we looking in the first 5 or 6 rounds, or do you think it'll go late?
I think it'll be anything inside 6, Steve. I think there'll be a feeling out process, because they can punch, but I think Beterbiev, he's got such a good IQ, and his brain works so quickly. I think he'll suss him out inside 2 rounds, and from 3 to 6, he'll start hunting him down.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think he'll get the jab going early on. See what Yard's got. See how fast he is. See where the punches are coming from. See how hard Yard actually punches. And once he's got a grip on him, then I can see him starting to hunt the body. And just, he's almost relentless in his approach, isn't he? Even against punchers like Johnson or Joe Smith, he's happy to stand in front of you. He's happy to take a cut. He seems impervious to pain. And he's just got that clubbing, thumping power. We were telling a story earlier about him beating up cruiserweights in sparring. He's not going to be around forever, Des. But I think he's just a couple of levels above Yard. Get through that and then hopefully move on to Bivol next.
That's the fight we all want, isn't it? That's a sort out. Beterbiev and Bivol, we all know where we stand then, don't we?
Yeah. Who are you going for in that one then?
I'd go for Beterbiev.
Just punches that bit harder. And he's a clever boxer as well, isn't he? He's not just a puncher. Sometimes people like label him as the puncher. I even heard someone referring to him as a slugger, which is an absolute insult because you'll know yourself with his footwork and his movement. He's not always the most graceful, but he can certainly box.
Well, I think what he's got that hat, he's got that, his hands and his feet are in sync and he's so strong physically. I think he has that ability to suffocate fighters slowly. So as I always pronounce his name wrong, but as Glavodnich found out, the longer you go with this guy, even if you're winning the rounds, you're probably losing the fight. He's a real specimen. He's a real tough guy. I'm not quite sure if Bivol's got the physical attributes to sort of keep this guy off for 12 rounds and come out in good nick. I think Beterbiev beats them all.
Beterbiev beats them all, Joe Kennedy. I want to see Beterbiev Bivol next. And I'm kind of, what have you done for me lately? Whenever I see Beterbiev smashing through Joe Smith, I think, oh yeah, Beterbiev, he's going to win that fight. Whenever I see post-Canelo Bivol completely outboxing, outfoxing, outthinking Gilberto Ramirez, I think, you know what, Bivol could maybe keep Beterbiev off. And I'm kind of backwards and forwards, like, oh, we saw so-and-so do this with Beterbiev, so maybe Bivol could do that, or we saw Beterbiev smash so-and-so. And I'm just back and forward. So come Sunday morning, Joe, depending on what Beterbiev's done to Yard, I could be back in his corner for that fight.
Yeah, I'm the same way. You know, it's two fantastic fighters, and probably after Crawford and Spence, probably the second best fight I think you can make in the sport. I would also favor Beterbiev. I think Bivol doesn't even, like, it's not like he moves around. He's not going to run around the ring. Like, he'll kind of do what Usyk does as well and stand in front of you and kind of make you miss and just subtle movements with him. You know, all the little tiny foot movements that makes him special. And I just think that with the amount of shots that Beterbiev throws, and they're all with murderous intent, you know, they're all heavy shots, that eventually he'll just be worn down. And it might go a little bit like the Gavosti fight, except probably a little bit more extended and with more success for Bivol. But as I think Zico mentioned, like how hard that Vosdick, or not Zico, Dez mentioned how hard Vosdick had to work for just those limited bits of success in that fight. It just shows you how punishing Beterbiev is, and it's just his power is on another level. And I think it might have been my AI ChatGPT bot who called him a slugger in my prediction email, Steve. So apologies for that. I'll have a word in his ear put some respect on his name, you know, because that is disgrace. You know, he's such a subtly brilliant boxer, like you mentioned. There's so much. He carries so much of that Eastern European amateur style with him as well, a lot of technical proficiency, and he adds on to that kind of natural power and, like, amazing work engine and stamina, and just, you know, that taste of blood that he gets in nearly every single fight that just lifts him into another gear. You know, it's all that stuff just makes him just such an incredible fighter. But and Bivol's an amazing fighter as well, but I just think in that matchup that I think the size would probably be the telling factor, and he would just end up being suffocated by the end of it.
But Joe, won't it be so interesting to just see Bivol go up that level? I think you'll probably agree with me. We've never quite seen Bivol really been pushed out of his comfort zone to any great degree. And I think he's got another two, maybe three gears to go. Even when he beat Canelo, it sounds ridiculous as great a fighter Canelo is. And even the physical specimen that Ramirez was, you always got the feeling that Bivol was kind of boxing within his skill set. And against Beterbiev, to win that fight, he would have to absolutely give everything that he's got. And we could suddenly see him just ascend this another level. He could be slugging with Beterbiev in those last couple of rounds. We're going to see him finally out of his comfort zone, and I just can't wait to see that, Joe.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing. You're dead right. Like,
he definitely seemed like he had an extra bit to go if he needed it against, definitely against Ramirez and against Canelo as well. Like Canelo just kind of looked a little bit labored and a little bit predictable by the end of the fight. And Bivol was nearly taking the piss out of him, you know. I think that I could see that fight going, you know, Bivol kind of building up an early lead and you know, kind of getting drowned late, you know, in a really kind of attritionally punishing fight, you know. I think it would be an epic one, definitely one that we need to see. But unfortunately, the last that I saw with regards to date on that fight was 2024. Mr. Bob Arum maybe had one too many jelly babies this morning and maybe got his years wrong. I don't know, but kind of need to see that fight a little bit sooner than 2024, Bob.
Yes, Bob. Hopefully Bob's still around for that one. One thing I'll say just on closing, then we'll have more topic. Oh, sorry, Joe. We lost you there. You back, brother?
No, sir. I said, hopefully not. You said, hopefully he's still around for that one. Maybe the fight will happen if he's not.
Exactly. Hopefully Todd DeBerf or Moretti or one of the others can get it over the line. Just to close out on the Beterbiev Yard chat, one thing that Joe was saying, and I know I mentioned this before the Canelo fight as well, I was watching an interview with David Benavidez, who'd done quite a bit of sparring with Bivol, and he said Bivol was very basic with the 1-2s. He did the same thing, but he did it very, very well. And he also had a bit of power behind his work as well. And the one thing was, whenever you backed him up and tried to like overwhelm him and get the better of him, he always bit on his gum shield and fought you back. He's a very proud, sort of stubborn guy. And I'd say he has that dog in him. I know we hear that all the time. About having the dog and the bite and all that, but I think Bivol's definitely got that. And if Beterbiev was sticking it on him in those final few rounds or whenever in the fight, he'd bite his gum shield and fight him. I honestly believe that. I think he's a hard bastard, Bivol, very understated, and he doesn't suffer fools easily. Right, boys, we've done the Beterbiev Yard chat to death. Before we close out this Nutter's Calling on the Friday evening, it's a shame Dez has left us because I was hoping to get his input and analysis on this one, but we'll maybe get it another time. Justin, Liam Smith against Chris Eubank last Saturday evening. Obviously, the boys on the panel on Sunday gave their verdict. One thing I was not expecting was Liam Smith, out of all the outcomes, to catch Eubank, hurt him so badly and knock him out. Assuming you saw the fight, Justin, what was your overriding feelings after seeing Liam Smith bang out Eubank in the fourth?
First of all, can y'all hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, because I'm moving now, so we're on the road. So.
Yo, go on.
So, yeah, I watched it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't use the word shock. I guess you would word, I don't know what to say. I didn't think he was going to knock him out. I think I'm like everybody else. I haven't listened to Sunday's pod yet. I usually save that on the drive home back. But I was surprised. But on the other hand, honestly, he got a lot of press because he beat – because the whole Ben fight and everything. But Eubank's just not that good. I mean, he's never been that good. I wish people would, like, realize he's just not that good. And he's hasn't beat anybody. He doesn't – he's not a good boxer. He doesn't have that much power. He's kind of athletic. He's just not that good. He just has a good last name. That's it. So, and Smith is just better. I mean, Smith knows how to box. He has a little pop, obviously. And Smith's just better. I mean, it's surprising he knocked him out, but I thought he was going to beat him anyway. So, like, yeah, I mean, Eubank, bottom line, Eubank's just not that good. He's 33. What's he got left? He's going to have to put in, but he'll probably have to take the Ben fight now because he got knocked out, so he's probably got no choice. He has no leverage now, and his career is going nowhere. He's probably going to fight some more random guys, but he's done. I mean, he's done. He's not going to win a world title. He's done. That ended his hope of having anything. That's it.
Well said, Justin. Big future for Chris Eubank there. I tell you what, though, Justin. The fight with Conor Benn can definitely happen now, as Ryan Deal jumps in the chat, says we want to be honest. Yeah, a lot of honesty from Justin on this Friday night. Conor Benn is innocent, Justin. Matchroom have done an internal investigation. They've got a lot of evidence, which they don't have to show to the public. It's all kept in-house, and Conor Benn apparently is innocent. We haven't seen any proof yet, but we have to take their word for it, Justin. Are you on board?
Yeah, he didn't do it. He didn't do it. For some reason, somebody tried to frame him. Like, what was it? Was it one of the... Which one of the – was it the FIs that says brother set him up? Is it, you remember that? Was it?
Oh, Galahad. Galahad.
Yeah, he put the stuff – somebody set him up. He didn't really do it. I think probably the Eubanks paid somebody because, you know, they wanted out of the fight. I mean, who knows? People, I don't know. You know, you would have more respect for Ben if he honestly – I think right now everybody listening to this and everybody in the message group would have more respect if he just come out and said, yeah, I just cheated the hell out of that fight. I cheated. I wanted to win. I wanted to get bigger. He's bigger than me. I needed the edge. I cheated. Screw it. I went for it. I'm sorry. I apologize. Punish me for a year or two, and I cheated. That's all he had to say, and people probably wouldn't have given that much shit. But to go through all this, what, 1,000-page book that he really wrote, make up all this stuff, just come out and say you did it, and people will have respect for you. Trust me. Just admit, I fucked up. I screwed up. It's over. That's all he had to say. And you would have some respect for him, at least.
Yeah, that's a reasonable answer as long as you're not talking to your wife. I mean, I don't know what it is, but for women won't accept that answer, you know. But,
well, my dad pulled that move, and she did not accept it.
Son of a bitch. Never
that's why, yeah, she did not accept it. So. Well, you know, that's like he tried that twice, and they did not accept it.
Damn it.
There we are. Some life advice from Justin, everybody, on this Nutter's call. Matty, one thing that has come to light since we watched Smith knocking out Eubank nearly a week ago, where does the time go indeed, was Elbowgate. Smith apparently landed this sort of devious elbow, which smashed Eubank, caused the bump on his face. Eubank's apparently going to appeal this illegal move, etc. This was a finger on the pulse of us boys on Sunday evening, as usual. We didn't even know anything about it at the time, and it was never mentioned. So how much of a big deal is this, Matty?
I don't think it's a big deal at all, man. Sometimes these things happen, and, you know, it's kind of part of the game. The ref sees it or they don't see it. That's kind of all the dark arts. It could be accidental. It could be on purpose. We don't know. Constantly, Steve, I go back to one of my favorite one-round fights that ever happened. I know I've mentioned it on the pod before. It was Ricardo Torres, Kendall Holt, the rematch. Yes. And Torres had Holt down a couple of times, and Holt got underneath and kind of came up with a headbutt, and he staggered Torres back, and he just landed a smoking punch over the top of it, and Torres was fucking out. They never overturned that fight. And that might have been for a title or an eliminator too. So it's, yeah, I mean, I can get why he's upset and shit, but it just kind of comes with the territory. You know, the ref either catches it or they don't.
Dez, we're closing out with a discussion on last week's fight between Chris Eubank and Liam Smith. Not many people predicted the knockout, and if it was going to come, we didn't think that it would be Smith. We're talking about Elbowgate a bit here. Where does Eubank go from now on in? What's your sort of analysis a week later after the dust has kind of settled on that one?
I always fancied Liam Smith, not because he was so good. I just felt that Eubank was lacking the fundamentals that he needed to beat a kid like Liam Smith. I've never booked Eubank as a top domestic kid. I thought the fight itself, I never saw that coming. But I just think, looking back at the screenshots, looking back at the pictures, looking at the weigh-in, I just think Eubank's dead at the weight. And I think his punch resistance has completely gone.
Yeah. I mean, he looked terrible, didn't he, when he was boiling down for the Ben thing. And we've talked about this as well. How much do you think of a factor the whole Roy Jones training is? Because Roy Jones is clearly trying to get into boxing, his image. And I just think it looked unnatural. He was too busy trying to manage the perception of the fight, the visuals, the way he was looking there, trying to get the jab off. But even when he was moving the head, it was very Roy Jones-esque. And it's a very difficult thing to pull off with such a great fighter.
We'll try to forget.
I mean, having Roy Jones training Chris Eubank, like having Antonio Conte managing Tottenham, it's just not a right fit. One's pragmatic and one's got so much style and flair and skill and natural ability. Eubank's not a Roy Jones, never will be. I just think all Roy Jones can do is confuse Eubank.
I think he just got the timing wrong. He became Roy Jones, you know, Glenn Johnson Roy Jones, and not, you know, super middle Roy Jones.
Well, I saw today just randomly highlights of the fight that he had against Avni Yildirim, and he was on the front foot, taking it to him, absolutely walloping into him, like walking forward. Like, that's the style that he needs. It's not kidding on his Roy Jones, you know, shuffling about, doing the kind of freak reactions thing that he's no got. Like, historically, I was always a kind of Chris Eubank Jr. skeptic, but I thought he was going to win that fight, to be fair. Like, I thought that, you know, Smith was maybe just a wee bit over the hill, maybe just a wee bit oversized. Oh, sorry, a wee bit undersized. And whether he caught him with that elbow or not, man, like, he landed two monster shots, and Eubank never really looked that comfortable in the fight. Like, first two rounds, Smith was kind of all over him. He was just boxing a sensible, kind of orthodox fight, and Eubank just didn't really know what he wanted to do. Third round, he kind of landed a few uppercuts and that, but he was never really in that fight. And Smith, as much as I don't like the entire fucking Smith family, he did produce, man. He showed up, he believed in himself, and he got the job done. So, you know, Eubank, where does he go from here? It's hard to say. Like, that fight against Conor Benn, like, leaves a bad taste in the mouth, even if he does it in the rematch. Like, he's always been a bit smoke and mirrors, can I Chris Eubank Jr.?
So, he has, but stylistically, like you said, Zico, that sort of early Channel 5, 2011, 12, 13 yeah. Eubank, who overwhelmed you with punches, that was a better style for him, I think.
It was a better style for him, but it's a long time gone now, and it probably depends on having a chin, which I'm sure he had at the time, but I'm absolutely not convinced that he's going to have going forward. Like,
I'll come in this thing.
Go for it.
Yeah, go ahead. Go. Yeah.
Sorry, no. So I didn't want to interrupt you. I just wanted to pick up what you said there. You're absolutely right. I think, and I said it in the chat this week, I think where Chris Eubank's concerned, it's all about simplicity. And he's never been a natural talent. He's never been, a skillful fighter. He's always been a tough, strong, overpowering kid. And I think someone like Joe Gallagher would have suited Chris Eubank to the, like, he would have done with Eubank what he did with Crawler, and just hands up, get the right distance and work harder than the other kid. I think that would have been a better fit for Chris Eubank. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine, man. Like, I totally get what you're saying. Like, I think Eubank probably should have been like a pressure fighter rather than a guy that tried to depend on reflexes that weren't really there. And
yeah,
like, if you're going to do the Roy Jones impersonation, you need to have ideally the reflexes and the power, and he never really had either, you know. But he was tough, he was rugged, he would walk forward, like, you know, like,
isn't that a bitch? Someone tries to get you to fight in a style, and all you need to do is A and B, and you ain't got either of
exactly,
them.
Exactly. No, it's true, but he doesn't. If he'd been like a high activity guy, walk you down, you know, a bit. What's his name? Fuck, man, I keep doing this when I come on here, I get pissed. And your man,
who are you thinking of, Zico? Who is it?
Oh, mate, I'm fucking long gone. Oh, well.
Whoever's
right, going to be like fucking Pictionary, man.
Whoever the right trainer is for AJ, I think, is the right trainer for Eubank. It basically, like, think of the styles, and you look at like what he does. He has a good jab. He throws good punches here and there. If there's anything that Eubank really does well, it's that he throws really nice tight punches in all of them. He jabs, he hooks, he uppercuts, he does all of them. So what you're right, he would work best as a pressure fighter. Work your way in with the jab and just change your punches as you close the distance until you're working inside on the uppercuts. You know, and I think that's a style that would work for AJ too. And neither of them are going the right route. I think Garcia was at least a step in the right direction. I just don't know that you know, British Olympian's gonna blend with Southern California and Mexican. I just don't know that that's the right blend.
The only thing I would say there, Matty, is the difference, but you're quite right in terms of their natural ability and what they bring to the table. But AJ has got a bit of a Frank Bruno about him in that every time he gets caught with a big shot, he looks in trouble. I've never seen Eubank look in trouble getting caught with a big shot before. That's the first time I've seen that last week.
But at the same time, Eubank has never had that kind of one-punch power.
No.
That AJ.
No, correct.
Did have, you know, and also the Frank Bruno had a bit of, but I suppose that's kind of the nature of heavyweight boxing. Most guys are going to have it.
Well, and how many punchers has Eubank fought, right?
Yeah, I was going to say that. But the
Abraham, George Spike O'Sullivan. O'Sullivan, the biggest.
Yeah. But Spike hurt him. Spike, for all his deficiencies, could punch. And George Groves could certainly punch, which is why we had this thing that Eubank had, this godlike chin. But he's never really stepped up to the elite, I suppose, the way like Frank did, to kind of find out that. And we found out the hard way last week in an unexpected manner. But yeah, you're right. But Spike could definitely bang.
It sounds to me like I'm probably in the minority in thinking this, but I actually think that Eubank Jr. is quite a naturally talented guy, and he's kind of where he is almost on the back of that natural talent, and obviously his name as well, which opens doors. But I think like he just didn't have a clear career path coming up. He didn't have like, you know, a lot of well-grounded training. I think he's lacking in, you know, a lot of the fundamentals of boxing as well. He doesn't seem to move his feet very well. His jab changes every time you see him fight, right? His style seems to be like this one mesh, and I just don't think that he's as fundamentally sound as Smith is as a fighter. I mean, I think that Smith has a lot more wrinkles in his game than Chris will ever have as because of all the fights he's had and the different types of fights he's had and the way that Eubank Jr. was kind of managed. You know, he was protected as a result of this kind of poor upbringing, if you will, in his boxing terms. Like, I just don't think he was properly developed as a fighter. I said to Maddie during the week privately that he was over-promoting and underdeveloped like some English prospects, and think he could try Anthony Joshua in there as well. But not to say that Eubank Jr. and AJ are two of the same, but I just think that we saw a difference between a real proper prize fighter in Liam Smith and a guy who is, as much as you can be, a part-time professional boxer.
I think there's definite parallels to be drawn between Anthony Joshua and Chris Eubank Jr. in the sense that Eubank Sr. never let his kids box until they got to a certain age, and then all of a sudden he shipped them off to fucking Las Vegas. But these were not kids that grew up in boxing gyms the way that some kids of professional fighters grow up, you know. So I think there is definite parallels between Joshua and Eubank Jr. in that they came late to the game, and probably both of them were probably closer to 20 before they started boxing, started progressing. And they have done like really well to get where they've got to.
Yeah.
But the price of that is they never had that instinctive, natural understanding of, you know, how to protect themselves, how, you know, they never had that absolute without any degree of thinking, instinctive boxing ability, you know, and they've probably paid the price for that when they got to the top level, when they paid them.
Mm-hmm. Now that's a fair point, that kind of amateur grounding as well, it can work in your favour or against you. Take Ames, has jumped on the call here. Seconds out, is it, Ames, you're frequenting these days?
Yeah, I don't want to utter another word until I've heard Matty's parlays for the weekend. Come on, Matty, where are they?
One, then.
I took Delakayan to win and the over in Better Be of Yard over 5.5 rounds, and that got me like, I don't know, 2.5 to 1 or something like that.
No women's basketball, no Premier League.
No, dude, my Super Bowl bet is still hanging on right now. I put just a small amount of money, but 16 to 1 on San Francisco to play Cincinnati, and I'm one get win away for each team getting there on this bet I placed a month ago. So I got some shit brewing, and that would be a good bet that would get me back into good territory where I could make some bigger bets again. Fucking Nadal and the French a couple of years ago fucked me, Steve. His first serve was shit. Just fucking shit. Anyhow.
They are gamble responsibly, Ames. Did you get what you needed there?
What does 15p get me, Matty?
What?
I'm a burger.
I think you'd get returns of about 60p there in total with your bet back.
All right. So I don't think it's for me. But look, yeah, jumping in on the Chris Eubank stuff. And yeah, I'm with Seconds Out, Steve. I've been with them for 3 months now, and they've didn't go to the fight myself, but I was covering it from home. I'm here for Better Via versus Yard. Looking forward to the fight tomorrow. Yeah, I mean, you guys have really kind of said it, but with Chris, like, you can't teach someone something that they don't want to learn. And Chris has never wanted to learn the ABCs. He's wanted the fancy italics, and he's ended up, you know, trying to learn that on the end of a wingding from Liam Smith last week. Don't know why I've gone like on a font analogy there.
Love it, man. Some font metaphors here.
Yeah, well, that's for us losers, Steve, right?
Microsoft Word up.
But Eubank, he's clearly had an image in terms of his branding that he wants to project, and that's also translated over into his boxing. So he's never going to, you know, fix him with Ronnie, who's been with his dad for so many years in his career. It was always going to be someone high profile like Roy. And speaking to someone like, I mean, you can probably tell me if this works, Steve, but speaking to Russ Amber in the week about, because he knows Roy very well, having been close friends with Roy, he mentioned that, you know, some coaches and some fighters just don't mesh. And I said to him, do you see that meshing with Eubank Jr.? Goes, it might do, but it depends on the fighter. If the fighter works as well, he kind of pointed towards Sean Pascal and Roy Jones Jr. being a good mix when those two work together. Like, I don't know enough about that, but Steve, do you remember that? If Roy and Sean Pascal, when they worked together, that was a good look for Jean?
Yeah, well, that is the most memorable one of Roy's. Roy's trained quite a few people over the years of various kind of abilities and levels. I remember him teaming up with Pascal, and he did have a certain degree of success. The only thing was, again, what kind of style was he training in? Pascal was quite kind of very athletic guy, very physically strong, used to gas out a little bit later on in fights, but quite robotic in the way he threw his shots. He lacked that athleticism that Roy brought to the table. So I wonder whether Roy needs a certain kind of fighter, a certain kind of style, very much with his own training career. I mean, he had his dad in his corner early on. His dad was absolute hell for leather on him, you know, and then he ended up going with Alton Murchison, which is a relationship that served him well. Whether he can lend himself to a trainer and get those things across. You know, some of the great fighters often say they don't train boxers because the boxer can't do what they used to do, and it frustrated them. So the likes of Pascal, to a certain degree, he had a lot of success, but he couldn't replicate, ultimately, Ames, the athleticism and the natural ability that Roy brought to the table.
That's a great point.
I don't see a fit, really, outside of what is potentially in Eubank Jr.'s head of what he wants from a trainer. Like, he says he doesn't listen. He believes he can, you know, train himself. He must see Roy to some degree as someone he can learn from, who's in a similar ilk of his dad. People have been calling for his dad to come back in his corner, but his dad's not in a fit enough mental state right now to be in that corner. So I don't know why those calls have been made. You know, it's an open secret about Chris, and of course we hope he gets well with that. But I think he'll stay with Roy Jones Jr. to, hopefully, his benefit, but really, I don't really see where those improvements are going to come from. And in terms of Chris's next steps, like, I think he has to take that Liam Smith rematch. Where does he really go from here? What level does he fight at? Can he get, you know, enough of a PR move to say, you know, we appealed, we thought it was an illegal elbow. You've got the footage, you can see for yourself, and they can kind of build it that way. Give the little David Hay mark of you robbed the bank, and if like he fought Belly the second time around. But I literally only see that fight being the only one really there for Chris Eubank Jr. right now on the horizon.
You feel, Ames, like he has to kind of tidy up that business, because how could he go from that? I mean, he couldn't go any higher and say, oh, I deserve to fight so-and-so, unless he goes in as a major B-side, knowing that he's been knocked out so devastatingly by Liam Smith. He would have to tidy up that first, and then, Ames, you would think, move on to the next level. Otherwise, he could barely fight on a par with Smith. No disrespect to Smith. And, I mean, going down in the levels, I mean, where could you even go? Again, it sounds very disrespectful to Smith, but you'd have to tidy that up first, Ames.
The saving grace is... Go on.
Go on, sorry.
The saving grace with it is, it's a bigger fight, at least what we've been told is, you know, it'll be the rematch will be Anfield. That's a stadium fight, bigger capacity than what it was at Manchester. So in those sort of terms, it doesn't really do Chris Eubank Jr. any harm in terms of you know, the scope on him as a fighter. Yeah, he's sure he's the B side, but really, when you're crossing over into the mainstream and on GMTV and you're pitching a fight to someone, no one really cares who's the second name there. The boxing casuals don't really give a crap about that. So the saving grace from that point of view is there, that it's a bigger fight. I just kind of felt a little bit sad watching the way that it happened with Chris. I think boxing fans, we know we expected the unraveling to happen with Chris at some point. We've seen him at when he steps up to a higher level before that, he's been found out, George Groves, and then Billy Joe Saunders. But I don't think anyone expected it to see it happen that way.
Yeah, not in such a devastating fashion. Yeah,
the sadness as well is, and it won't have, it's something that you feel wouldn't have happened anywhere else in his career, even in the sparring, because of the way he amateurishly got up straight away and didn't even take the seconds to recuperate as much as possible there.
I don't think his mental capacity was even there, Ames, at that point, to even think to do that. To be honest, he was really gone.
But this is the thing. If you're a fighter and you have those hard spots, you're going to get buzzed. So you know how to just take the second. Someone will give you that moment to say, all right, just take a second there, like if they're looking after their fighter. The little comments about, well, not little comments, but, you know, the rhetoric about Chris Eubank Jr. having a granite chin and not being rocked before in his career. He has been rocked before in his career. It just was never picked up on. Groves dipped him and his knee hit the canvas when they fought. It just never was called a knockdown. Like, I'd always seen that susceptibility in Chris Eubank Jr., but it was just highlighted obviously to a greater degree against him. But he's got to take that rematch. Otherwise, like, there's no way you can go. I can't think of a fight at middleweight that really appeals to anyone. Like, what do you do? You Fowler, Denzel Bentley? Like, where do you go? Really, it's Liam.
Do you give him a good chance in the rematch, James?
No. No, I don't.
Then why take it? That was the question I was going to get to.
I don't give him a good chance. Like, when you ask me, like, you know, give him a good chance, it's less than 50% chance. But I just think he's got to take it. He's got to find a way to win. That's in him to game plan that and try and figure that out. But yeah, like I wouldn't pick him to win.
Dez, I was just gonna, Dez, I was going to ask you about the training situation just briefly, about Ronnie Davis's role. It feels to me like he's a kind of old head. How much is he actually listened to by Junior? It feels like Chris Senior is kind of crowbarring him into the corner. And I'm not against that, because I think Ronnie Davis is a good guy, you know, sound counsel. But it never felt like Junior was really wanting him there.
Steve, I saw firsthand the old man didn't listen to Ronnie Davis. So I'm certain that the son don't listen to him. I see it firsthand. I remember Chris coming down to the Repton and Ronnie Davis was bad. He held his bags and he kind of got told where to go, what to do, where to stand. And we couldn't quite believe it. And I've never quite understood the relationship. I've never really got the Eubank thing. I love the dad. I think he's one of the top five hardest men in British boxing of all time. But I've never really got the Eubank Jr. thing. I've never understood in the early days when the dad would posture in the corner, done up in a bow tie. I've never understood Ronnie Davis's role. It's all very peculiar for me. In answer to your question, Steve, I just think he's there as an advisory capacity. I just think he's there because it adds to the brand. I don't think it...
Well...
Sorry, Steve, I'm the busiest man in London tonight. I don't think he has any hands-on involvement with Junior. I think that ship sailed, to be perfectly honest. I don't think he's there for any practical purpose.
Yeah, well, I kind of cut short, but what you said about Repton there, Des... sorry, I know people are ringing you here. What you said about Repton actually is where I was kind of edging, and I'll just be plain talking. It's almost as if he's a little bit disrespected in the corner, Ronnie. And like you imagine, if he had a bit of dignity, he'd maybe say, right, I'm off here, almost.
And I think he loves the family. I think they love each other. I've got no doubt about that. But I just don't think that there's... I think the Eubanks are hard work. I really do. Could you imagine... I just think they're hard work, Steve.
If you imagine, his dad's fucking weird as shit, man. Like, just being like, just listening to him get interviewed, you feel like he had a fucking stroke. Can you imagine, like, seeing him multiple days a week? Fuck me. I just fucking die. I would just fucking die.
But something, I think Joe said it earlier. Imagine trying to ask someone to box like, imagine asking someone to be as tough as his dad or box like Roy Jones. It's like a rock and a hard place, isn't it? And I'm just not sure that Chris Eubank, although he's a marketing genius, and I think he's got stardust sprinkled on top of him, and I think he's got a value. I'm just not quite sure, is there anything better than a good domestic kid if he gets the right fights? And I think Nick Blackwell's the right fight. Yildirim's the right fight. But Billy Joe, George Groves, Liam Smith, they're not the right fights for Chris Eubank.
What about the guy that lost to Alamhanala recently, went 12 with him?
Yeah, Denzel Bentley. Someone mentioned him earlier.
Yeah. That's a good fight, I think.
I think so the problem we have with Eubank Jr. is he's a box office attraction. Fighting Denzel Bentley, which is a really hard fight for Eubank, I don't think he wins that one. And I don't think he's box office. And I don't think there's enough money involved in it. And I don't think that's a direction Chris wants to go in. I think Chris wants to go upwards, but in a sideways step. So what I mean by that is a James DeGale at that time was perfect for Chris. He needs more of them.
Yeah.
I spoke to Denzel earlier today. The words are words and everything, but Denzel said he doesn't chase the losers of that fight. He wants Liam Smith as opposed to Chris Eubank Jr. Yeah.
That's a decent fight too. Why not?
Yeah, I think Des made a good point there, Matty, because Denzel, he hasn't got the name that Chris wants. He's a real hard night's work, Des said again. He's got an excellent jab. He can work hard. He showed he can go 12 rounds at a very good level against Alim Hanouli.
Yeah, against a guy who can bang.
Yeah, and there's a chance Chris could lose, and he doesn't want those type of fights.
That's sideways and up for Denzel to chase, you know, Callum Smith. Like Des was saying, if you're a kind of so-so guy, you know, kind of semi-well-known, semi-successful, semi-kind of ticket seller, those are the fights you're looking for, you know? And Eubank has done well to get where he is. Like, he had that kind of weird fight with Billy Joe Saunders where probably wasn't the best Billy Joe Saunders. But, you know, Saunders kind of dominated the first half of the fight. Eubank kind of bossed him about the second half. Like, before that fight, I was absolutely convinced that Billy Joe Saunders was going to wipe the floor with Chris Eubank Jr. And he probably should have wiped the floor with Chris Eubank Jr., but he didn't. Like, that alone makes me kind of look at Eubank and think, what could have happened to you? Because when you look at, like, Eubank, he's never really stepped up to world level. Never really beat anyone that you would...
No one world level in their prime, at least.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Yeah. Okay, he beat
DeGale,
but DeGale and Abraham were both fucking washed, or they were kind of one foot out of the sport.
He's been maneuvered very well. I mean, you got to give that to him. Like, they got these names and protected him, and there was obviously flaws there. And I mean, that Saunders fight, they haven't really fucked around since that Saunders fight until now.
I mean, that was until Saunders obviously got, like, his face broke apart by Canelo. That was his toughest fight. Like, and Eubank at that point, I thought Eubank was a joke back then. I was, like, absolutely convinced that Saunders was going to wipe floor with him, and like I say, for 5-6 rounds he did, but then for 5-6 rounds he didn't. And it's just a bit of a shame, like, the way Eubank's career's panned out. Like, he could have been a kind of probably quite a decent kind of pressure fighter, walk you down, throw a lot of shots, take them back, but up to a certain point he had a great chin, and it's too late for that now. He's never going to be that guy. He's not going to be the Roy Jones guy. And
he was always looking for the missing piece to make him better rather than putting in the work to find it.
Okay. Maybe, yeah, no, I get that.
Maybe, Zico, you're right what you're saying there. I think maybe deep-rooted in Chris is an identity crisis, because maybe he could have been a Clinton Woods or a Dennis Andrews or a pound shop Carl Froch, but he was never going to be a Roy Jones or a James Toney, was he?
Carl Froch is a great comparison. Like, Carl Froch was not the silkiest boxer, but he was hard as nails. He had a bit of technical ability. He could punch to a certain extent, and he put it all together and fought the best that, and won his fair share of those fights. Like, the best that Chris Eubank could have been is probably that sort of guy.
Yeah.
But Carl Froch was probably boxing from the age of 10. Eubank never started boxing to whatever age he started. You know, he grew up the son of a famous boxer who we all know he's kind of had his problems, probably never wanted his kids to follow in his steps, but he kind of gets sucked into it. Whether it was a good thing or a bad thing for him, that's where he washed up. But maybe if he'd started when he was a kid, he would have been a Carl Froch type guy. But he's not been a Carl Froch type guy. And absolutely, I think Froch is he's the kind of example of what maybe Eubank could have been. But he's not been that.
I think Froch and Eubank Jr., the difference between them, it's kind of a study in real confidence and fake confidence. You know, like, Eubank acted the way he did because he learned from his dad. So it's just the way that you act, right? And he's always trying to get his dad's approval, always trying to impress him. And that's what drives him. His confidence isn't there. He's a kid seeking dad's approval still.
Froch
doesn't give a fuck. Froch was real confidence. He would said he could beat he's the guy that walks into the bar and says, "I'll beat the toughest son of a bitch in here." You know, that old Dempsey kind of attitude.
Nah.
Into him, Zico, go on.
Eubank Jr. has got the same kind of charisma that Eubank Sr. had. He's got the same kind of arrogance that Eubank Sr. had. He just doesn't have the natural boxing ability. Like, Eubank Sr., more than probably any other British boxer I can think of, has got to like a high level without really having that high level boxing ability. That's all come off his personality and his arrogance and his ability to sell fights. Like,
yeah, Froch is more like Eubank Sr. than Eubank Jr. is.
No, he's not. No, he's not. Like, in terms of fighting style, absolutely. But in terms of like promotional ability and being able to get yourself in the spotlight and provoke a reaction from opponents and fans of those opponents, like, Eubank Jr. has got more or less everything that Eubank Sr. had in terms of like promoting the fights. He just doesn't have the fighting ability. You know, Carl Froch has probably Eubank Sr.'s fighting ability, but not Eubank Sr.'s promotional ability. You know, I think
it's learned behavior. Like I said, like Carl Froch is who he is because he's built that way. Whereas Eubank Jr. is just emulating his dad and what he did.
I think he inherited that ability to promote himself the same way he inherited that chin. It just so happened that the chin ran out. Now, like, you see, Eubank Jr. is being himself. He's not kidding on. He's his dad. Eubank Jr. is an arrogant fucking prick. It's like, if you, Matt,
well, not as much today as he was a week ago.
Well, Matt, are you familiar with like Blackpool Rock? Have you ever heard of Blackpool Rock?
No, I've not. I've heard of Fraggle Rock. I've heard of, if it's anything like Fraggle Rock, it's crazy.
You've not heard of Blackpool Rock. If you were to chop Chris Eubank Jr. in half, the words arrogant prick are written through him like a stick of
Blackpool. I wondered where you were going with that one.
Well, this is where I'm going with that one. He is one fucking arrogant bastard. And fair play to him, mate. That'll work for you when you're selling the fights.
And Zico,
you inherited that for his dad. On you go. What are you saying?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to add to what you were saying, but I think to spit that conversation, remember with Carl Froch, he was a three-time ABA champion. He was a world bronze medalist. I think he was the first English kid ever to medal in the Worlds. He also had phenomenal grounding at domestic level. I think he fought Damon Hayes, Matthew Barney. I mean, that's serious British title fighting.
Michael Monaghan and all them. Yeah.
And that's something that Chris Eubank Jr. never got the opportunity to do.
And in this game, it's about what you pick up on the way. And we talk about Yard, we could talk about AJ. And what these guys always seem to lose, foul at when they get to the top is that work they never done when they was on the way up. And people like Carl Froch, people like Tyson Fury, people like Clinton Woods, people like, they really did that. They had their wins, their losses, they had their hard fights before they got there. So they was prepared. And I just don't think Eubanks ever had that.
No. But he could have had it if he grew up, you know, with a father that was there kind of horribly disgusted by professional boxing.
I don't think they wanted him to have that, though. They could have gone that route, couldn't they? They circumvented it, do you not think?
Yeah.
Well, you talk about that route. Like, that route starts in childhood. And Eubank Sr. never wanted his kids to do that. You know, kind of got to the stage when they were about 17 or 18. They hadn't really done much boxing. And they shipped them off to Las Vegas. Don't know if that was the best way to do it either. But that's kind of how it washed out for them. But, I think Chris Eubank Jr., he had quite a lot of the tools, but not enough of the experience that you kind of need to get to the top in boxing. And that's how it washed out for him. You know, maybe he can come again. Maybe he can get that rematch against Liam Smith.
The thing is, as well, Zico, if you look back at his record just before he fought Billy Joe Saunders, there was no grounding whatsoever. I've got it up in front of me here. Sandor Mishko, Robert Gierbinski, Stepan Horvath, Ivan Djukic, Omar Siala, and then straight in with Saunders.
Like, absolute nobody's. None of those cunts has got a Wikipedia.
Sounds like people you meet on a Peace Corps tour.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, like, he fought absolute nobodies, and then he still ran Billy Joe Saunders, who was a pretty talented guy, reasonably close. You know, it's just a weird fucking career that he's had. Like,
he's really a top level domestic fighter. I mean, I think that's his level. You know, he'd be Commonwealth champion. You know, he'd probably be European champion, potentially. But that's his level, is right there, and beyond that, he just doesn't have it.
Possibly. Right, boys, we're gonna do the final close. You know, Ryan Ormerod on the ball as always. He said, didn't even know this was a thing. I need to use Patreon properly. So welcome, Ryan, to the chat this evening. We started with Baturbia of Yard. That is where we are going to close out before the Nutter's Call comes to an end. Des, final quick summation of Baturbia of Yard and give us a round and a winner if you can, please.
Baturbiev by stoppage, round six.
Round six for Des, Baturbiev, stoppage, Zekonomics. Who are you going for by what method?
Baturbiev, stoppage, round four.
Round four, not lasting very long for Zekonomics then. Matty, what about you?
I'm going round nine.
Round nine. Ames hasn't given his summation yet. What did I go for, Matty? Did I go over the six?
So it was 6.5, and you ended up going under, but you thought it was going to be sometime around the sixth. You're right in the mid round, and to be fair, in the books, the over under is at 5.5, with a little bit of the lean in the over that direction.
Right. Okay. Ames, bet responsibly on Matty's advice there. Who are you going for and by what method? And give us a breakdown, actually. Not a mental breakdown. Hopefully not on this Friday evening. But who are you going for by what method? Let us know what you're thinking.
I'm going for Baturbiev. I think I'm going to echo what Matty said, round nine. I think he actually gets it done later than maybe what's perceived right now. A little bit of a breakdown. There's nothing really to break down. Everyone's really covered it. I think everyone's really read the fight, pretty much how it's going to go. I think if I can invent my own little lame cliche here, I don't think Yard has a puncher's chance here. I think he has a lander's chance, because I think he will land on Baturbiev. It's just whether that shot that Yard lands on him takes him out. If people make a lot of that Viterbiev knockdown that he suffered against Callum Johnson. And if you watch that fight back, Viterbiev underestimated Johnson. That's what happened there. He didn't take him seriously, had him down. Johnson then clocked him, and then as soon as he got up, Viterbiev just unleashed on him and finished the fight off. Like if Viterbiev's any lackadaisical like that, then there's an opportunity for Yard. So I feel the opportunity is there, but that's what it is. It's a small window of opportunity, and I genuinely do think like he has to do what he did against Kovalev. If he gets the opportunity, he does have to empty the tank again. There's no two ways about it, because you won't get that second chance with Viterbiev. There's nothing to show that you get that in his career. So it has to be pretty much the same thing that they did with Kovalev. And Tunde might get the stick for that in terms of the game plan being the same, if it is how I think it is. But that's their route to victory. But yeah, look, Viterbiev is an awesome fighter. Just some of the stories that you hear about coming out of his camp. We had Callum Simpson on. They were talking about how all the training and sparring partners huddled around him to devise a plan to, you know, hurt him and get him.
Maybe if there's five of us, nothing worked.
and nothing worked. It's just a different level of fighter. But look, Steve, you've seen it. Matty, you've seen it. And you guys have seen it more than I have in my relatively short time in boxing. Stranger things have happened, and people do get old overnight. Golovkin, we've seen that recently. I was one of the people who didn't want to see it with Golovkin. Rob was saying it quite vociferously. I just didn't want to agree with him at all. But we've seen those signs of regressions. Those regressions happen. And they do happen overnight. Something could come together, but I just don't think it will tomorrow.
Yeah. You're going to be there, Ames, tomorrow night. You might bump into Chukwu if you're lucky. I think the atmosphere is going to be buzzing, you know.
Yeah, I think judging by it, I believe, speaking to some people at Queensbury, they're not too far off selling out. That might just be talk, but if it is, there'll be some atmosphere. It's a shame it's not really being supported by a relative undercard. There's interest there in Moses Otoma, who's going to be something big if you listen to the speak from everyone in boxing who's seen a little bit about him. But then you've just got like a random world title fight in there, which has no sense to any boxing fan apart from, you know, the hardcore.
Be a good fight, Ames. I really think that's going to end up being it might not be as good as the main event because no one has a horse in that race in the stadium per se. But I think, you know, as far as value goes, that's going to be the fight of the night, and it's going to be very good.
They got it on the cheap, didn't they? I think
sure. It's a good fight, but if that's co-main event or cheap support, whatever you want to say, that's the piss break. That's the food break for people. It's going to suck the atmosphere right out of the arena, if there is one, by that time.
What a bunch
of aims. You're getting me down, man. I was looking forward to the fight as well.
Just saying, Alex, it's going to be a good fight. Don't get me wrong. I agree with you there. It's just I'm seeing it from the perspective of looking at a card, and I'd much rather have... No. I want to see the fight, sure, but I just think it makes more sense to have something more relative to UK fans there. Especially as like, look, I feel like as well in terms of promotion, this has gone a little bit under the radar. It like had quite a lot of traction when it came out, but it feels like for me, maybe I'm reminiscing it a little bit, but the Kovalev fight was almost promoted a lot more. Maybe that's because they feel Yard had a better chance in that race in against Kovalev than Betterbia, but I'm pronouncing it two different ways in this conversation. But anyway, it feels like the promotion just gone a little bit lacking, because Viterbiev doesn't really speak all that much. Like if this was the same person, but it was an American speaking, an American fella speaking English, you know, the promotion would be a lot better. But
I like Tony Harrison or something like.
Yeah, exactly. But because it's not, I think you needed something just a little bit more, you know, relative to the UK audience on the co-main there.
It's like Golovkin. He had to build himself up into a living legend until the networks bought into him, and then a few fights in, after he's just demolishing people, people were into it. Unfortunately for Viterbiev, we both said it both ways. He came in later after his amateur foray, and then also COVID and stuff like that. So he didn't have that number of fights. And the kind of the cool thing about his career that you got to say is they didn't fuck around with him at all. Like they really just kind of threw him in. And I mean, what was his 10th fight, give or take 11th, and he was fighting for a title. I mean, Vosdick, a couple of fights after that. I mean, that's no joke. I mean, people, because Vozdik retired right after. I think they forget how good he was at that time. I mean, that win he had over Stevenson was great. And because, you know, what Stevenson was so fucked up after that fight and, you know, ended up in the hospital, I don't think we go back and watch enough. But that was a phenomenal fight where he really dug deep and finished that fight well. And that win that Archer had, that few professional fights, that shows levels. And they moved him along quick.
Well, yeah.
And he might only have 5-6 more fights at this rate, you know, before his heyday is done. But I think he's going to be that kind of Golovkin. Can't say the name. How do you pronounce that? But they're a fucking legend.
Yeah, I think Matty early on, they did move Beterbiev quite quick, didn't they? They put him in with Tavoris, Claude, and Gabriel Campillo within his first 8 fights or something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I forgot about it. I mean, they just moved him along, not Lomachenko fast, but damn close.
Mm-hmm. Right, we're going to close it up then, boys. Thanks for everybody who has come on and joined us. Everybody in the chat as well. Shout out to Des for jumping on. Good to have you with us. Justin as well, driving his 18-wheeler in South Carolina. He left us earlier. Joe Kennedy, head of the Prediction League as well. Zekonomics, I don't know whether he passed out or he left voluntarily, but either way, he's gone as well. Ames as well, shout out to him for joining us. And last but by no means least, Matthew, tomorrow evening you are running a post-fight pod.
Yeah, let's fucking get together and talk about this fight when it's done too. We haven't done that for a while, and like I said, I think the Dalakayan Jimenez fight's going to be really good. So I think we're going to be pumped up and have a lot of good stuff to talk about.
Yeah. You just want to scoop up the Paul Fury views.
Yeah, I'm going to get that out of the way so Steve doesn't have to deal with it on Sunday because I care.
You need to be time sensitive tomorrow night, Matty. Remember, it'll be 1 a.m. where we are. We need to get the no piss heads on the call. You know what the post-fight pod's like.
Yeah, man, if this has as many decisions as that card last week, yeah, you guys are boned, and it just might be me talking to the air like it was on Chicks with Dig before Joe Kennedy joined me.
There we are. Good stuff. Yeah, I will create the link very shortly and we'll message that out. So anybody who wants to join the post-fight pod, you're more than welcome. If you enjoyed the Nutters chats, then patreon.com/boxingasylum is the place to join us. Or if you throw in a load of super chats, you can join the WhatsApp Nutters group as well. And you can come on and talk like these boys. Thank you to everybody. We'll catch you again tomorrow evening for the post-fight pod. Then we'll be back for episode 508 on Sunday evening with Matty, also in the hot seat. He's working hard this weekend. I've been Steve Wellings. Catch you all again soon. Thank you and bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.